You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama, baby, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. Ooh. This the truth like 34. Yeah. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, 17 banners, way up in the rafters, J. King, John Corrales, and Sam Jam Packard. Focus like Danny at the deadline, global, but it got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time, I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly's, Rainy J's.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making us part of your regular routine. So we did like Monday, Friday this week. Next week, daily. Back to daily. Lots of changes coming, but daily is going to be the thing that comes back. So for now, let's just get into today's podcast. I am John Corrales. I cover the team for Mass Live. Joined by Samuel Jamison Packard the third.
Jam.
Little delay on the jam there. Young baby Jamwich.
Jam.
We're going to get into a few different things here today. We're going to blatantly steal from NBC Sports Boston, like completely rip them off. Talk a little bit about Gordon Hayward and Enes Kanter's comments about him. We will start with Semi Ojeleye talk because earlier in the week, we got to talk to Semi Ojeleye. He was part of a dedication at the Blue Hill Boys and Girls Club. They redid like a wing in the Boys and Girls Club. So he was there talking to the kids, big unveiling, Celtics Foundation doing some great work. I think Boston Scientific was involved. I was specifically like said, hey, remember that they did a thing here. So everybody who was involved, you did a good thing. And Semi Ojeleye was there. We got to talk to him a little bit. Two things that stood out here from that. One was he is aware of his opportunity. And he knows, obviously, he knows that Al Horford and Aaron Baines are gone. He knows that there's room in the front court. There's room on the wing, whether coming off the bench, starting. He knows it's there. And the other big thing that he spoke about, Sam, was kind of getting out of his own way. He said that he got down on himself during bad stretches. He was a good shooter in college, but he's had no real consistency in the NBA hitting that three-point shot. And he talked about how he got down on himself and how he needs to kind of just let things go this upcoming season.
It's interesting because I think Semi had an interesting year last year in that Brad Stevens came out and announced that he was the most improved player on the Celtics, but that title did not coincide with playing time. And I think it made sense with the Celtics roster last year. It was definitely it was top heavy and there wasn't as much opportunity for him, but it was kind of odd to hear Brad say that and then just not really get the playing time. I thought Semi's three-point shot definitely improved, especially from the corners last year, but it wasn't consistent. And the thing that I think is interesting about Semi coming into the season is that there is an opportunity in that the Celtics front court is relatively thin. It's just I think their weakest position, I think we're going to be talking about it a lot, is like what they do with the center position. And is he trying to emerge as kind of a small ball five option? Because we've seen the Brad use him as a small ball five in past scenarios. And if doing so, he could really, if his three-point shot improves, I think he can really get himself out on the court. But I don't think he's as good a passer or a playmaker as, say, even I think Grant Williams is at this point. And I think maybe I'm overhyping Grant Williams just because he's such a nice guy, but that is like kind of a part of his game. And so I'm curious. I think there is an opportunity for Semi to kind of get more playing time this year. I just don't know what that role is going to be because I think it's like he's probably the most valuable as that small ball center. I just don't see him as having as much value as a four, especially if he's playing against a or on the court with a bunch of other like centers who, unless it's Tice, can't really shoot. Or can the Celtics like worth like really withstand having that few shooting on the floor? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm underselling Shemmy's 3-point shooting ability, but I don't know. Where do you see him making the biggest impact, as a power forward or as a center?
I would say as a power forward, because they've got a bunch of centers as it is. And if you're going to have, I think Shemmy needs to get himself that consistent 3-point shooting. If he can do that and be a stretch four, then you can throw him out on the floor with Cantor, and you have Kemba, Cantor, Shemmy, and two of their three wings. All of those other guys can shoot, and it doesn't really matter that Cantor isn't going to pop all the way out to three. Though Cantor could probably pop out to 13, 15, 17 feet, somewhere in there, and that's enough. If you have a fourth guy out there that can shoot but also be strong enough to guard other fours and switch on to a five if you're switching, then that's where I think Shemmy can really be the most valuable. I've said all along that my ideal starting lineup is Kemba and two of the three of Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Gordon Hayward. Obviously, Tatum, I think, is going to be a starter, so that means your decisions between Gordon Hayward and Jaylen Brown, if you can put a power forward. Now, I've been saying Grant Williams, in a perfect world, steps up, becomes a starting caliber player, which I know is probably asking too much of him this season. But in my perfect world scenario, this doesn't take into account egos. It doesn't take into account people being happy or upset with their roles. I think in a vacuum, perfect world, having a guy on the floor in that four spot, especially, that's not looking to score, that's looking to just go out there and set picks and do all of the dirty work, allows four other guys on the floor who are looking to score and do those things. That allows those guys to go do that unencumbered. And my fear, like we've talked a lot about, like Jaylen Brown starting at the four, but that puts five players on the floor at the same time that are all looking for their offense. And I think that's just too much. And I think we saw last year that some of the best offensive basketball was when Jaylen and Gordon Hayward were coming off the bench together, kind of spread out the guys who were looking for their offense. So whether it's Shemmy, whether it's Grant, whether, you know, Grant surprises us, I think Shemmy really does have an opportunity to even earn a starting four spot. You put him out there with his ability to stretch the floor. If he can put the ball on the floor and attack closeouts a little bit and just make one good pass. I'm not asking him to be, you know, Jokic out there. Just find an open guy and go back out to three and be switchable on defense. I think Shemmy has a chance to maybe earn that spot. And like I said, ideally, that's what I would want. I would want somebody like him in that spot so you can bring either Jaylen Brown or Gordon Hayward off the bench.
I think it's going to be interesting with him and Grant Williams, because I think offensively Grant Williams has more of the skill set I think that the Celtics are looking for, in terms of a guy who's a passer who can really kind of handle the ball at the top, be the kind of guy for dribble handoffs. But Brad's history of playing rookies is just not something that happens, especially if they're making mistakes on the defensive end. And I think Shemmy, his biggest strength right now is his ability to play solid defense. And so I wouldn't be surprised if early on, especially, that Shemmy gets, he's clearly going to get the opportunity, just because Brad's never trusted a rookie. Like, he never goes into a season trusting a rookie. And so, I think it's Shemmy's position, like, to kind of be that guy with that four, position to at least start this year. I think the competition will be interesting, because I think Grant might have ultimately, kind of more of the offensive talent there. But I think just from being a solid defensive player, which we've seen Shemmy be, I mean, the guys that he started in the playoffs and guarded Giannis, I think he's like, if you just want a reliable person to go in there, you know, he's not going to make mistakes. I think that Shemmy's going to be the guy that Brad turns to. So I'm excited to see him get the opportunity at least to start, because I think that's exactly what he deserves. If he is the most improved player, he at least gets gets the opportunity to show that to the rest of the league.
Yeah, it really just depends on his three-point shooting. It really, that's the thing that hurts him the most. He is at just under 32% for his two-year career. Shot 32% in his rookie year, 31.5% last year. Now, looking at his splits, he shot 33%, 33.3% post-All-Star last year. And as the year progressed, he definitely got better. He didn't shoot much, so we're looking at a small sample size, but February, March, he was 7 of 15. So that's just under half his 3-point shots. Then in April, he was 2 of 9. So back down to a poor percentage. So he got hot for a couple of months, but again, not a lot of 3-pointers. So you can almost toss that out as an aberration statistically, but it also does show that he has it in him to hit those threes. So again, bottom line, if Shemmy can come out there and just be a league average shooter, maybe a little bit above 36, 37, 38%, if he's in that range, then he'll get an opportunity to play because he can do all of the other things.
How is more importantly, how are his muscles looking? How is the Ojeley factory looking in the offseason? He's still like an ox?
Still just completely, fully Shemmy, which was funny because Gary Washburn asked him, like, in your summer workouts, what do you focus on? Because, like, you can't really get any stronger than you are. And it's like, and you hear like the summer kind of,
I put on 15 pounds of muscle.
Everybody puts
on. Joel Embiid lost 35 pounds.
Yeah. Right. Like that's, everybody's losing a ton of weight. Everybody's putting on 20 pounds of muscle. Shemmy is just like, yeah, you can't, like, I can't try to put on more muscle. So it's all about mobility and flexibility and cardio for him. So. Yeah, Shemmy still, I mean, he was rocking long sleeves and sweatpants, but you knew what was going on.
You could tell.
You knew. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit about Gordon, and then we'll rip off NBC Sports later on. Stick around. More of the Locked On Celtics podcast coming right up.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
This is almost a continuation of the Shemmy Ojeley discussion because what his role is, I think, will be completely impacted by what Gordon Hayward is. We've talked a little about Gordon Hayward, and Enes Kanter has been working out with him, and Enes loves the camera. Enes loves talking. And I definitely think in his WWE style, he'll talk things up. But he was asked by NBC Sports Boston, who's that Celtics Talk podcast, you've been working out with Gordon Hayward. What do you see? And he said flat out, he should start eyeing the All-Star game. Obviously, Enes played with Gordon Hayward back in Utah. He knows Gordon Hayward at his best. Are you buying, Sam, the Gordon Hayward should be eyeing the All-Star game based on what Enes Kanter said?
No, because Enes Kanter is the most unreliable narrator I have ever encountered. I can't believe a word that guy says.
It's fun.
I have a lot of hope for Gordon Hayward entering into this season. I think Gordon Hayward will probably, I mean, hot take alert. I think Gordon Hayward's going to have his best year as a Celtic.
Yes.
And I think he's going to be closer to all-star form than he's ever been. And so I have a lot of hope for Gordon Hayward. I think he's has many, many reasons to come into camp motivated. His wife is yelling at him to stop playing video games. She's motivated. So I think Gordon Hayward's going to be good, but I don't know about all-star level. I feel like I'm at the point with Gordon Hayward where I have to see it. I mean, last year, I think he was just like, we saw him doing workouts where he was this amazing shooter. And I'm pretty sure you were leading the campaign that he's going to be a better shooter because of what we saw last year in summer. And so I'm just not ready at this point, based on the reliable source of Enes Kanter to place him in the All-Star game. I think he's going to be much better, but I can't say All-Star level until I see it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's certainly red meat for all the Gordon Hayward believers out there. Yes, last season, in my defense, all he did was shoot. Like, all he could do was shoot.
He should have been better.
I really, really thought that a guy that all he could do throughout all of it was just refine his touch would go out there and be able to at least shoot the ball. But, you know, whatever. It just didn't work out that way. I have, though, been a Hayward believer. I do believe that he has it in him to get back to that level. I don't think, I could be wrong, but I don't think this is the type of injury that's going to completely sap all of his athleticism and everything. So I think this is a huge summer for Gordon Hayward. I do believe Enes Kanter in the sense that I'm pretty sure that Gordon Hayward looks awesome right now in these workouts. I do believe that he is out there probably doing some old G things in workouts in the summer against coaches at the RBAC Center. So I'm not going to discount how good he might look in these workouts. And I'm certainly not going to discount the possibility that he could return to an all-star form. But I'm with you in that you do need to see it. And I do think it's also good for him that the team dynamic has changed, let's say. And there's going to be a much more positive vibe out there around this team. So I think all of that's going to help. I think Gordon's biggest problem has been his confidence and his mentality.
Yeah. And I think like there's not as much pressure on him to, I mean, clearly without, I think there's going to be pressure on him to be good, but there's not pressure on him. There's not championship expectations. And like, especially after starting the season 10-10, I think a lot of points last season was like, well, what if Gordon comes back and what if he returns to his all-star form? And there's a lot of pressure on like, maybe he's the solution for what this team needs. I don't feel like there's as much expectations for him heading into the season. So I think that will be helpful. Like any positive he does. I mean, if he comes out and sucks, I think people might be upset. I don't know. I'm just another hot take from Dan Packard, but
it's possible.
I just think there's like they don't expect star from him this year. I think that a lot of that expectation is going to be for Kemba and Tatum especially. And so I think that he's in like a perfect position to just kind of like, I don't think he should be having to ease back into his role, but I don't know if there's as much pressure on him, at least publicly. I'm sure he puts a lot of pressure on himself, but I don't think there's much public pressure for him to be kind of the savior of the season.
No, I think you're right. I mean, obviously the focus is on Kemba. There is pressure, I think, on Tatum to improve, to show that improvement.
Tatum has been getting slandered ever since Team USA, slandered left and right on NBA Twitter. And it's mostly just because people love tweeting
Why?
About the Celtics. And because it's not irrational stuff. It's just like they think he is overhyped. And it's mostly for the sake of jokes. But I mean, it's been frustrating as a Celtics fan. And I'm a big don't get mad online guy. So I've been trying to ignore it. But I have seen Tatum catching a few strays of just people saying like he hasn't done anything yet. And it's like, he's only in his third year. And I think he's been pretty damn good so far, but I do think there's a lot more expectations for Tatum to be a star this next season than there are for Hayward.
Yeah, I think there is certainly a segment of the Celtics fandom that has written Hayward off. Like, he had that bad season. Obviously, he had the injury. I think there are certainly people out there who are like, you know what? He's done. He's just never going to be the same. It sucks. Maybe not blaming him, but the injury is what it was, and they're kind of just chalking it up. So maybe that works to his advantage. Who knows? But yeah, I agree that Tatum's got more pressure on him for sure, especially with this misconception that he had some sort of step back in his, like, the year one to year two. I don't think there was a step back. I mean, we've talked about this too, but I thought he was a little bit better, but maybe not as much better as people wanted him to be.
Well, he didn't make like a huge leap. I think like what happened in it's all about expectations. And as I think as we've learned with the Celtics season last year, is like how much going into the season and what you expect frames the subsequent performance and how you react to it. But I think initially we were all just shocked about how good of a 3-point shooter he was and how like great he was in his rookie season. And so he outperformed expectations that year. And so then he gets super hyped heading into his second year and then doesn't necessarily outperform expectations in his sophomore year. And it's like, oh, he's done worse. So it's like, no, he's still pretty damn good. I think he was like the similar player. I think his efficiency numbers probably went down, but I also think that's because he was taking more shots. Now, maybe he shouldn't have been taking more shots with Kyrie Irving also on the court, but I'm not going to blame him for the odd team dynamic of last year. So I definitely don't think Tatum took a step back. If any, like at worst, I think he was as good as his rookie year. And I think in a lot of ways, he made big improvements in his game. And even just watching him in Team USA, it feels like his playmaking and his passing and even just like simple things is like how his approach to the basket have improved. So I would say that's poppycock. Poppycock, I say.
Damn it. Poppycock indeed. Let's take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to completely steal from NBC Sports Boston after the break. Stick around. More Locked On Celtics next.
You are Locked On Celtics, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, here's how I'm going to justify this, Sam, when we just completely steal from NBC Sports Boston. So they're doing this whole countdown to Celtics camp. And it's a thing that Chris Forsberg has been doing for years, asking certain questions and then getting panel answers in response.
Oh, yeah, I used to be on that panel.
Exactly.
Oh, we could completely justify it.
Yeah, I used to be on that panel. You, Jay, like, he reached out. He cast a wide net, and we would get more than a dozen people and work that in. Now he works for NBC Sports Boston, and the panel is basically him, Abby Chin, and Sherrod Blakely with Max Letterman chiming in from time to time.
Oh, I'm glad they let Max talk.
Sure.
That's always fun.
That's a good guy. I mean, he's you know, a champion of Weird Celtics Twitter. Yeah, so that's great. But so they do this thing. They've stopped asking us, but that doesn't mean that we can stop answering the questions.
We got takes, baby, and that's I think the general public needs to hear them. I think they're doing – we should be blaming them.
Right.
For being so close-minded.
I'm going to assume that Chris Forsberg wanted to ask everybody, but was shut down by evil overlords at NBC Sports Boston, who, in case they wanted to, you know, consider whatever, never mind. They're not so evil, you know, if they want to put
me
on TV.
I don't know. I don't know them personally.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to put me on TV, they're not evil. But if they don't...
haven't put either of us on TV, so they're not good in my book.
That's it. Until they put me on TV to analyze Celtics along with their regular crew, they're evil to me. So there. Take that, people who will never hear this. Okay, so let's rapid fire our way through some of these questions. The first one was, what's the most intriguing camp storyline? Do you have anything that pops into mind? I think the conversation we just had, like I think the Gordon Hayward thing is probably the most intriguing camp storyline.
What are we going to learn in camp? It's not like there's anyone battling for positions. I think maybe it's rookie playing time, but like, I think the most, I don't know, nothing. There's nothing in training camp that I'm like, we're really going to figure out.
Well, I do think that the, how good Gordon Hayward is something that we will start to see as far as storylines in camp. If all of a sudden Gordon Hayward is dominating, and we know that preseason has always been a little bit misleading, but if Gordon Hayward comes out and plays 15 minutes of amazing basketball, then there's going to be like hello. If he's dunking on people and he's kind of Utah Hayward, then yeah. So I think the answers to the questions that we've had about Gordon are that's probably the most intriguing camp storyline to me. Now, you brought up rookies. One of the questions is, who will be the most impactful rookie? So playing off the intriguing camp storyline, maybe this is part of it. Who do you think, Sam, might be the most impactful rookie on this team this year?
I mean, we've been talking about Grant a lot, and I think there's the opportunity is there for him to do that, to kind of make a name for himself. We saw a lot of Carson Edwards making shots, which I think will be important. I just don't know how much actual playing time he's going to get. And the thing that's insane to me is that we've just no one's talking about Romeo Langford.
No.
Like that guy, the highest Celtics draft pick, the one with the most upside, has just not been mentioned whatsoever. And so I think the safe pick is Grant. But the more fun pick is Romeo Langford. And I don't and I think it will probably change depending on where they are in the seasons. Cause I think earlier on, I think Grant is probably more reliable, but I think because Romeo is so young, he's still retooling his shot that, maybe towards the end of the year, he'll be a more impactful guy. So I'm going to go with Romeo just because I think he's flying too much under the radar right now.
Yeah, I can see that. I do think it's between maybe Carson Edwards and Grant Williams right now. That is the safe pick. That's my pick because I saw him just doing a lot of things that this team kind of needs. He's a unique rookie in that I don't believe he's going to be asked to score much at all. Take open threes and see if you can hit those. But I think his rebounding, his defense, his passing, pick setting, all of that other
grifting,
stuff.
Grifting, hustle plays.
Absolutely. The grifting is going to be huge. All of those things I think are super important. And I keep saying it over and over again, but this Celtics team needs a guy who's going to play a bunch of minutes that doesn't care about any of his numbers. That is a super, super important guy to have on a team, especially on the front court, where most of the guys that are out there are looking to get numbers. I just feel like taking away a guy who's looking to put up shots and using a guy who's doing all those other things is super, super important. And he stands out to me right now as a guy who has a good chance to do that. All the other stuff, the shooting, the scoring, the driving, all that'll come in time. But asking a guy to box out and make the right rotations, if he's smart and he's willing to learn and put in that work, I think he can make an impact pretty quickly. Next question. Does Taco Fall make Boston's roster?
Now, they just brought in another guy.
Yeah, I think that's...
To the same contract Taco's on.
Yeah.
I'm continuing to say no, so I'll be pleasantly surprised if he is. But they have so many big men that it just, it seems absurd to carry a fifth big man when there's going to be four other guys fighting for that role. Like, if you talk, like, send him to Maine. Have him be the main, give him minutes in Maine. I want Taco in Maine. I just, it makes way more sense to me for him to be there.
I can see a situation where they upgrade one of their two-way guys, whether it's Tremont Waters or Max Struss, that they do that to open up a spot for Taco to get a two-way deal. And this way, I don't think they can cut and stash him because I think somebody's going to snatch him up. He's too much of a cult personality. I think he holds some value in bringing a phenomenon, like PR-wise, just to some team that needs good press. So I think they need that. So if they cut him, somebody's and try to do that cut and stash, somebody's going to bring him in. I don't think he makes Boston's 15-man roster. But I do think he has a strong chance to make the two-way spot. I don't think that you're going to carry, they're going to carry five centers into the season. In fact, I've been arguing that they should send Robert Williams to Maine and let Robert Williams get his reps and play 30 plus minutes for the Red Claws, because that's going to benefit him more than one season sitting on the bench. And then next year, Robert Williams becomes more of a focal point at that position. But I can see them keeping Taco around. You know, it would be really kind of shitty of the Celtics to keep bringing Taco out to these charity things all summer.
Like, he's a mascot at this point.
He's been to almost everything, to the point where, like, so we go to all of these little court unveilings and things, and Taco's been to like four of them, five of them. We don't even know what to ask him anymore. But to make him such a part of the community, to keep putting him out there to do all that stuff and get that visibility, if they're just doing that to be like, well, Taco's popular, let's get the attention off of Taco, like, that's kind of crappy, because you're getting people's hopes up. So I would hope that that's just part of an inside knowledge, like, yeah, we know that they're going to work something out to keep him somehow. Because otherwise, if they cut him after all the stuff that he's done, he's been so visible. I don't know. I think that'd be just kind of crappy.
I can see it happening, though, because it's like, it feels like the type of thing where it's like, I don't know, the marketing community relations department is probably not talking to the basketball relations or basketball operations department about plans for the upcoming season. And they just like, no. If I'm in community relations right now and I'm trying to plan a bomb event and I'm trying to get people hype, you damn right I'm asking Taco to be
sure.
There.
Yeah, no, I get it. I totally get it. Like, that's,
I agree though. It would definitely suck if it's like, we're just going to use you to try and like sell a Mika insurance for these 2 months.
Well, I mean, it certainly does get the attention. Like, we go out, like, we're going to go out to these things anyway, but like, people, I got to tell you, man, you throw Taco Fall's name into a headline and the numbers just take off. Like,
it's Taco Mania. He's bigger than the Beatles.
He is. Yes, he is. So I don't know. We'll see. So that's my guess on Taco. I'm going to say he gets a two-way deal. Final question before we wrap things up. As they phrase it, who visits the hardware store? As in, who gets a postseason award?
The only one I can see, like reasonably getting an award. Because there's not that many awards. I don't think that anyone's going to make all NBA. I don't think anyone's any of these Celtics players are top 15 player in the league. I don't think anyone's going to be the MVP. But I do think Marcus Smart will be first team all defense again. And I do think Marcus Smart has a huge chance to be sixth man of the year as long as Lou Williams doesn't score 20 points a game again.
Sixth man of the year would be really interesting. I don't know that Marcus Smart is going to score enough. I agree. I would put him on an all defensive team. Now that he's made a first team, it's going to be really easy for him to make it again. So just keep doing Marcus Smart things and he'll be like a mainstay on the all defense team. I like Max Letterman's Gordon Hayward most improved.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that, but that isn't like a perfect narrative, like comeback story.
Yeah, I think that's going to be, I love that guess. I think everything put together, the type of season he had last year to come in, and even if he's close to an all-star, even if he's, you know, in consideration, like that type of season would definitely get him a unanimous most improved, I think. So I'm going to go with that. Sherrod picked Brad Stevens for coach of the year. Is this possible when you think about expectations and no expectations? If they overachieve, do we get the almost, oh, well, it was Kyrie's fault last year. Look at what they did without Kyrie. Look at Brad. Yeah, Brad coach of the year.
I think they would have to finish in first in the East.
Really?
Because
Third?
This is a question. I think they're expected to finish third. And so if they don't outperform expectations, then how is, like, I feel like coach of the year normally goes to man, we thought that team was going to be a lot worse than they were. And this guy really, the coach really is the one who put them over the edge. And so I think right now, if you ask the majority of NBA fans, I think, the Celtics are probably the team I think that most would pick to finish third in the East after the Sixers and Bucks. Am I crazy in that? Am I just being a huge homer?
No. You're right. I think they're definitely in that mix. Toronto would be in that mix. Brooklyn might be in that mix. But they're in that three team mix for third. So how about this? If they finish second, if they're better than Philly, I think that might be enough to get Brad some coach of the year consideration. He'll get votes.
Yeah, he'll get votes. Could be second place. It could be number of wins. Like if they get to 55, which let me tell you, folks, I'm not predicting that.
But, come on, if they sports do
something
optimism.
Something like that, then yeah, I could see it happening. But I would say Hayward most improved or Smart sixth man. I would think Smart sixth man is actually more likely than Brad for coach of the year.
Mm. I would go the other way.
But if here's the thing, do you think Danny could get GM or executive of the year if Kemba just goes off? Or like Enes Kanter, like I don't see Enes Kanter really working out, but if like what if Kemba just has like one of the best Kemba years he's ever had? I know, I still think it's about team success, so never mind. Just trying to throw out
I get it. No, I don't think he would win. I can't see a scenario where he would win because his offseason included losing Kyrie and Al Horford. So
yeah, that Horford thing is really kind of upsetting.
Yeah.
Personally.
So I don't know that you can lose your two most important players and then have an executive of the year, even though you recovered to get a third team all NBA guy. I don't think so. So that's
the reasonable answer.
Damn me for being reasonable. I think this is a reasonable place to end the podcast. So thanks, Chris Forsberg, for doing all this and giving us content. And we'll just assume that you wanted us to ask to answer the questions. So we did. You're welcome. That's the show. Again, next week, back to daily. So season's back. Monday is media day. then practices. We're back on the grind. The season is back in a couple of days. So subscribe to the podcast wherever podcasts exist and leave us a good rating, please. A 5-star review would be awesome. Check out our ratings. We're at like 4.83 stars. So someone's not giving us that 5-star review. Let us know. What can we do better? And or just give us that. Just go back and edit it. Just help us out. Do that. Share the podcast. Spread the word. Tell everybody to listen to the Lockdown Celtics podcast here on the Lockdown Podcast Network. Rainy days.